Okay, let's get going. So, first of all, I should apologise for my complete idiocy yesterday in finishing the lecture 10 minutes earlier than I was supposed to have done. I know why it is. It's because my brain, you see, is a state machine with a very small number of states. And earlier that day, I'd had a tutorial to take, which did finish at 10 minutes before the hour. And obviously, that was enough actions in one day that my brain got into a state it had been in before. And so it got confused, and then it just carried on that way. So, try and learn from our mistakes. I'll go on till 5 o'clock today. I was wondering why I was not catching up with my slides. Okay, so we were talking about the pumping lemma, and this is how to show a language isn't regular. So, you'll recall the basic idea was if it's claimed that you've got some machine with k states that recognises some language, then if you've got any long string, and within it you've got a sort of window or a substring of at least k characters, then even within that little bit, there's going to be some state you visit more than once. Call it q. So let's draw a little loop here for the states between the first and second times of q. And then you see, from the point of view of this machine doesn't care whether you go around the loop once or twice or three times or not at all. You'll get to an accepting state anyway. So we'd got as far as formalizing a statement called the pumping lemma, which says if L is a regular language, then there must be some number k, there must be some number of states that's big enough, such that whenever you have some strings with these properties, there's a way of breaking down the middle one so that the bit, the V in the middle, is something that you can pump in as many extra copies of as you like. And by devious and convoluted reasoning, we'd convinced ourselves that this was equivalent to the contrapositive form, which says if not P is the case, and that's the opposite property, then L is not a regular language. So we're going to use this as a tool for showing that certain languages aren't regular languages, because we're going to show, and I'll just give some examples, we're going to show this rather complicated looking property. And as I said before, the pumping lemma's sole purpose in life is for showing that languages aren't regular. Okay, don't try and use it for anything else. Okay? So, as we observed yesterday, this statement not P is quite a complicated statement. So logically, it's got the form for all something or other, there exists a something or other, such that for all something or other, there exists another something or other. So the first for all there, for all K, there exists a choice of X, Y, and Z, such that for all U, there exists an I, such that some simple statement. So if you want to prove a complicated statement like that, in order to keep your head clear, it's very useful to think of it in terms of a sort of game or a sort of argument between yourself and an imaginary opponent. So suppose that you are trying to claim that not P is true, and your opponent is rooting for the fact that P is true. Or let's say your opponent's rooting for the fact that there is some finite state machine that corresponds to L. So the idea is okay. Right, it's probably best just to skip to the simple example. Okay. So let's think how this works in the case of this language, which is our prototypical example of a non-regular language. Okay. So we want to show this property not P, that for all k there exists x and so on and so on and so on. Okay. So we reason like this. In effect, we say suppose there were some DFA for L and it had k states. Okay. So our opponent thinks he has a machine that recognizes L. Okay. And so he starts by telling you the number of states it has. So the idea is we don't get to choose what k is. K is something the opponent chooses, our opponent chooses, and we just have to cope with whatever choice of k he throws at us. So there's nothing in this line that says what k is. is just say, opponent will give us a number, and let's just call it k. And whatever k is, we have to do something. So our opponent says, I have a machine that accepts this language, and it has 14 states or something like that. So whatever k is, we have to cope with something. And then we have to choose a string that's sufficiently long and complicated that it's going to confuse any machine with that number of states. So we want to show that his machine, whatever it is, isn't really a machine for recognizing this language. So we want to give a string that's long enough that it's going to confuse his machine and throw it into disarray. Okay? So we can choose strings here that are and they're allowed to depend on k here. So the more states the machine has, the longer the string you might need to confuse it. So let's say we choose a string, the empty string followed by a to the k followed by b to the k. Okay. So the idea is that the a to the k is, by making k big enough, by feeding it k number of a's here. Sorry. Yeah. That's already going to be enough to throw the state machine into some confusion, because it's already got k states and there's going to be some revisited state here. So this is the bit that's basically going to confuse the machine by forcing it to revisit some state. And we can put whatever before or after it we like. And let's just put nothing before it and then put b to the k after it to make something that is in the language. Okay? So this is going to be in the language, and the length of y is actually equal to k in this case, and that's enough. So in our proof, we don't get to choose k, but we do get to choose x, y, and z, which are allowed to depend on k. So we have to come up with some cunning and crafty choice of this string, which is going to be sufficient to confuse any proposed machine with k states. Okay? By confuse, I mean do something with it that'll enable us to show that machine can't possibly correspond to this language. Okay. So if that were the case, then somehow this k state machine is going to loop during this y portion, this a to the k portion. So our opponent will come back with some decomposition of y into strings u, v, and w, where v intuitively will correspond to the loop in the machine. So v is a non-empty string, and there's bits before or after it. Again, we don't get to choose what these are. Our opponent gets to choose what these are. We just assign that, we just say let them be called u, v, w, whatever they are, and we have to cope with whatever opponent throws at us. And now we do get to choose a number I. So we've got to choose a number of times we're going to go around the loop to get something that's not in L. So this is what we need to do in order to establish this condition not P. We have to show blah blah blah, there exists an I such that the resulting thing is not in L. So here, if we took I equals 1 here, then u v to the I w would be just u v w, and that would be just the string y we have here. So we would know that would get us into give us a string that is in the language L. But anything else, you see, won't. Because supposing we took I to be 0, for example, then you see this V being just part of Y here, this V is going to be some number of this V is going to be some number of A's, right? And it's going to be some number of A's, at most K, but at least 1. Okay? So if we take U V to the naught W, that's just U W, we're just leaving out some number of K's here from our original Y. So this U W is going to be A to the L for some number L that's less than K. Okay? We've omitted the loop, so we've got fewer A's than before. But now if we look at this string X U V to the I W Z, so that's the whole thing but missing out the loop, that's now the string A to the L B to the K, where L is less than K, and so by definition that's not a valid string in our language. Okay? So we've won the argument at this point. Okay. And notice that we had the freedom to choose the value of I here. And here I just chose a constant value of I, but in principle it would be allowed that this I could depend on K and even on U, V, W, and so on. So we've proved, so this argument here proves that L satisfies our condition not P. So by the pumping lemma, L isn't regular. So this is a typical use of the pumping lemma to show a language isn't regular. And as you can see, there's a general pattern you have to follow in terms of what bits you choose and what bits aren't chosen by you. So the general structure is the opponent proposes a number of states, K, for some machine he thinks he has that corresponds to your language. Once again, you don't get to choose what K is, you just have to cope with any possible value of K that's thrown at you. And then you respond with a cunning choice of strings X, Y, and Z, which allow it to depend on K, and they have to satisfy these properties. This X, Y, Z together is a valid string in the language, and the length of Y is at least K. And you should cunningly choose this so that Y lets you disallow pumping, in the sense that if you try to pump some other number of the looping substring in, you're going to get outside the language. So the cleverness, and there's no sort of particular algorithm that you use to do this, you just have to be a bit clever. Based on your understanding of what's going on, you have to choose a string that's going to confuse the proposed machine. Then your opponent picks a way of decomposing Y as U, V, W, with V is not empty. And again, you don't get to choose what they are, you just have to cope. Then you get to choose I, and you'd better choose an I that's different from 1. It could be 0 or 2 or more. But if it's 1, then you'll get a string that is in the language. But you can choose I such that this is a string that's not in the language. And in principle, this might be allowed to depend on everything previous. So when you do examples of this, and there are some on the new tutorial sheet, this is the structure you always have to follow. Okay, so we've seen one example, so let's just finish with one other example of an application of the pumping lemma. And here, okay, this is a language with just an alphabet with just one symbol, the letter A, okay? So this is all strings of A's whose length is some perfect square, okay? So we're allowed 0 A's or 1 A or 4 A's or 9 A's or anything like that, okay? Slightly funny language, but... Okay, is it a regular language? Could you recognize this with only finitely many states? Well, no, you couldn't, but let's use the pumping lemma to see how to prove that, okay? So, see what the intuition is. Okay, so the idea is, let me draw the intuition on the board, okay? Suppose you've got a string of A's. And let's suppose this does have some square number of states. So supposing this has got k squared states, okay? And I look at the last k states of it here, okay? So there's going to be somewhere in this, even in this window of k states, and there's nothing here but a's, remember. There'll be some bit here which you're allowed to loop on. So there'll be some bit here that's of length at most k, okay, such that if you pump in extra copies of this bit, you'll still be in the language, okay? So this is a bit that's a length at most k. So let's pump another one of those in. And that basically is tantamount to adding another copy of this on the end of it, because it's all just a's, okay? So now we've got something which is at length... So the length of this bit is at most k, right? Okay? So the length of this bit is at most k squared plus k, right? But there aren't any perfect squares after k squared until you get to k plus 1 squared, which is k squared plus 2k plus 1, okay? So here, we've added in a few more a's, but not enough to get you up to the next perfect square, okay? So we've now got a string that isn't in the language, because the length of this isn't a perfect square. So that's the idea, because we've pumped in some smallish number of k's, and that's going to be good enough to confuse the machine. So let's look at formally how this goes. So our opponent gives us, so we're given k by our opponent. Suppose there are a DFA with k states. Okay? So now I'm basically interested in this string a to the k squared, which is in L. But I'm going to decompose it as, so the x bit is the bit before this window of k states we're interested in. So this will be k squared minus k occurrences of a, and then there'll be k occurrences of a to finish it off, and z, well, I can just take that to be empty. Okay, so this is the string that is in the language, decomposed so that we're focusing on the y bit is the bit we're really interested in. Okay, so we know that if there were a machine that accepted this language with k states, it would have to repeat a state in the course of processing this k. Okay, so giving any splitting of this string y, a to the k, as u, v, w, with v non-empty, we have the length of the v bit, the v bit's this little bit here, okay, is at least 1, and it's at most k. Okay, so if we do what I did here, we pump in basically two copies of this, we take I to be 2, then we were looking at the string x, u, v, think of it as x, u, v, v, w, z, and that's a to the n, where n is some number between k squared plus 1 and k squared plus k. And then, as I said before, there are no perfect squares between k squared and this thing here, so this n here can't be a perfect square, so this thing isn't in the language. And we've won the argument. Okay, so then we say, by the pumping lemma, we can conclude that this language isn't regular. So it's a very standard structure to all these arguments, but you just have to keep clear head about which bits of the data you control and which ones are thrown at you by your opponent. Okay, clickers. If you haven't registered your clicker, do so quickly. Okay, 3 clicker questions for the price of 1 here. Right, this is cheating, right? They're just binary questions. Okay, so just from the, I'm not expecting you to apply the pumping lemma in your head, but just hopefully you will have some intuition for now for what languages are regular and what the limits are of regular languages. So, okay, so let's have a go at the first one of these. Think of the language over AB. This is all strings with an odd number of A's and an even number of B's, okay? So I have to decide whether you think that's a regular language or not. If you think it's regular, to vote regular, type 1. To vote non-regular, type 2. Okay. Voting, of course, won't affect the truth of what it is. But, okay, let's give this a go. Tension mounts. Good, okay. Yeah, it is indeed a regular language because, so we know, basically, there are only four possibilities we need to keep track of. Either we've seen an odd number of A's, an odd number of B's, an odd number of A's, an even number of B's, and so on. And every time we see another symbol, be it A or B, we can just switch between those. So hopefully it's clear. There's a little machine with just four states that accepts exactly this language. So just because I've said something about odd and even numbers here doesn't mean you actually have to. Just because superficially I mentioned a number of things doesn't mean your machine actually has to count the number of things. If you're only interested in keeping track of whether it's odd or even. You can do that in finitely many states. Very good, okay. What about strings containing more A's than B's? Okay, once again, 1 for regular, 2 for non-regular. Okay, off we go. real quick. Where do I... So most of you voted two. Okay, someone voted three. That's interesting. Anyone want to admit to that? No? No? Okay. Someone who doesn't believe in the law of the excluded middle, something like that. Okay. Right, so we most of you voted non-regular, which I agree with. So the idea is to recognise this language, you would have to keep track of the at least the difference between the number of A's you've seen so far and the number of B's you've seen so far. Because if at a given stage you've seen 27 more A's than B's, you kind of need to know that, to know that if you got 26 B's after that, you would still have had more A's than B's in the end. So you need to be able to remember an arbitrarily large number to record this language. And so formally, you could use the pumping lemma to actually make that precise. That would be an example. In fact, I think it is an example on... No, it's not. No, it's not. It's similar to an example on the tutorial sheet. So, yeah, that's what a thing you can't do with regular languages. Yes. No, that's one. How about the strings in which the number of A's times the number of B's is congruent to 6 modulo 24, okay? This is just... Yeah. Okay. This is just for fun, in some perverse sense. Draw the answer. Okay, some of you are just having fun. That's good. Okay, so most of you thought non-regular, okay. Most of you thought this was sufficiently complicated, I guess. Anything as complicated as this has got to be kind of, you can't do it in a finite state machine. So that's a reasonable guess, but it's wrong, of course. So there is a finite state machine that can recognize this language, and what it is, it's actually a donut with 576 states. Nice. All right, let me explain. Okay. So if we want to know what the number of A's times the number of B's is modulo 24, it's enough if we know what the number of A's is modulo 20, if we keep track of what the number of A's is modulo 24, and we keep track of what the number of B's is modulo 24, then those between us, between them, are enough to determine what the number of A's times the number of B's modulo 24. So supposing I just have a little loop, a 24-hour clock, if you like, okay? And this will just loop round here. You can just have a little looping thing with 24 states that keeps track of the number of A's modulo 24, okay? Now supposing I have sort of the product of two of these, okay? So supposing a loop round here was the A loop. So this is our start state, okay? And we have a loop for the A's here. And if we're going to keep track of the number of B's, we've got another 24 loop there. So we have 24 times 24 things there, okay? And then you just highlight as accepting states any pair of numbers, okay, such that when you like 2 comma 3 would be okay, and so would 5 comma 6, because 5 times 6 is 30, which is 6 modulo 24. So you just mark as accepting states any pairs here which happen to be 6 modulo 24, and you've done it. Okay, so anyway, that's just a bit of light relief. Okay, how are we doing? Right. Okay, so I need to put the clickers away just for now. There might be more clickers later. Okay, so that's basically the end of the regular language part of the course. Now, in some kind of slightly informal sense, there's only kind of finitely much theory to be covered about regular. There's only finitely much you can say about regular languages, in some sense. And I've pretty much said it. Okay, so pretty much you know all, in principle, all the theory there is to know about regular languages, and there's nothing more to say which doesn't follow pretty trivially from what I have said. So it's quite nice because you can kind of reach a point where you know all there is to know about regular languages, which isn't really the case for context-free languages or anything else. They're kind of more open-ended topics. So now we're going to start on context-free languages. Just before we finally bid farewell to regular languages, I want to draw your attention to a bit of software you might like to play with. So there's a thing called JFLAP, and we've got it on the dice machine, so if you just type JFLAP, okay, it's to the Linux command line, a little window will come up and it'll let you play with this. And this is basically just a little tool that lets you do all manner of things to do with language processing, finite automata, pushdown automata, grammars, Turing machines, lots of things that are going on in this course. So let's look at what you can do with finite automata. You can construct and run them, and you can do various things with transition. You can convert an NFA to a DFA, you can minimize a DFA, you can convert something to a regular expression. In fact, you could have done pretty much the whole of tutorial sheet one if I'd told you about this. But you may well like to play with this. If you just type that and just start playing around with it, you can probably discover by trial and error what happens. But if you Google just JFLAP, you'll get to this page, and this tells you what to do. So let's see, for instance, yeah. Oh, don't want to know about that. So you get a startup window that looks like this, and then you click finite automaton, and then you can sort of put together machines just by clicking around and then sort of animate them. So, you know, watch sort of highlighted blobs going around. Let's see what else it can do. Oh, there's a nice complicated one. Okay, so there we've got some non-deterministic computation going on with some highlighted states. And you can, you know, step through things, blah, blah, blah. So, and then you can, you know, use various tools to play around with them and watch the number of states explode as you do evil things to them, and so on. So I'd be interested if any of you sort of do get anywhere with this and sort of manage to have some fun with it, then I'd be interested to know, whether you find it enjoyable, useful, what bits of it you like, don't like, so on. So let me know. So just if you like something a bit more interactive, a bit more machine-based, on the regular expression part of the course, and indeed on the later parts that we're going to come on to, then you might like to look at JFLAP. Okay, so right, so now we are finally moving on to something more than regular languages. So let me go to full screen mode. Okay. So we've now got a bigger and richer class of languages we're going to discuss called context-free languages. And whereas so far we've been talking about languages as defined either by machines or by regular expressions, we're now going to look at a really rather different way of approaching the whole problem of defining a language, and that's going to be defining languages by means of grammars, in fact, generative grammars of certain kinds. So I'll give you the basic idea of those, and we'll start with some examples, and then later, probably not today, I'll give you what the official definition is of context-free grammars, then follow it up with more examples to show you the sort of range of the concept. So, we've seen that regular languages have their limits, right? We can't cope with things like well-matched sequences of brackets, where brackets can be nested to arbitrary depth. And features like this, as we know, are kind of important in programming languages because programs very often have nested structures, quite deeply nested. So if we can't cope with arbitrary levels of nesting, then we're beyond the realm of what regular languages can deal with. So because there are lots of languages with deep nesting of structures, we'd like some more powerful means of defining languages. So we're going to talk about a new approach via what's called generative grammars. Now, these were introduced in linguistics by Noam Chomsky in the 1950s. And the reason they're called generative is Chomsky's starting point was the observation that, and this was mentioned on that Stephen Fry program, you may have seen it. So if you people who grow up being able to speak a language, they have the ability to generate basically a limitless number of sentences in that language that they've never heard before and that possibly have never been uttered previously in the history of the universe, okay? And those sentences can in turn be understood by other people. So there's some kind of obvious, the fact that we can generate and understand sentences we've not seen before means we're doing something more than rote learning, where there's some kind of rules or some kind of internal machinery we're applying to generate sentences. So the idea is we're going to focus on how you a set of rules that you might that are capable of generating all the sentences of a language, and we're going to use that as a way of defining the language. So we'll give a set of rules, and then we'll say the language we're talking about is the language consisting of all sentences that you can generate using those rules. Okay, so it's a bit analogous to giving a machine and saying the language we're talking about is the language of all things accepted by this machine. Only instead of machines, we're talking about grammars here, sets of rules. And there's a particular kind of generative grammars we're going to look at called context-free grammars, and we'll come on later to why they're called that. Okay, so this is a rather new approach to how to define languages. So here's a first example. So let's look at a language of sort of pretty simple kinds of arithmetic expressions. So these are expressions like these, and they're basically built up from numbers and variables using plus and times. And I'm allowing bracketing, and I'm allowing you to nest brackets, bracketed expressions as deeply as you want. And I'm also allowing just a number by itself or a variable by itself as a trivial example of expression. So these are typical. These are going to be typical strings in the language. Okay. Now, how do we define this? We define this language by giving a set of rules that's capable of generating all these strings and many many others. So let me sort of read this. Tell you how to read this first of all. So this says basically an expression in the language, and these things are expressions, an expression can consist of just a variable by itself, okay, or it can consist of just a numeral by itself, or it can consist of an open bracket followed by an expression followed by a closed bracket, okay. So we've got three possible rules or three possible ways of generating expressions. But that's not all. We've got two others. So this says an expression can consist of another expression followed by a plus sign followed by another expression, or an expression can consist of an expression followed by a times sign followed by an expression. So basically we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 possible ways of generating an expression, some of which involve generating smaller expressions within it. Okay, so you can think of this like this top line here with these vertical bars for these alternatives. This is really just an abbreviation for what I could have written as three separate lines. So there's no, or I could have written all five on one line if sort of the width had let me stop. So yeah, think of this first line here as an abbreviation for exp arrow var, and then another line exp arrow num, exp arrow brackets x bracket. Okay, so this gives us some rules for generating expressions, possibly involving other expressions. And our expressions here are ultimately going to be built out of variables. So we've got rules here saying a variable can consist of just x or just y or just z. And a numeral can consist of just 0 or just 1 or just 2, blah, 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 or just 9. So for simplicity here, I'm only allowing single digit numerals. Okay, so that's a bit of a limitation, but we'll kind of remove that in due course. So some of the symbols that appear in this grammar, namely the plus, the times, the brackets, the letters, and the numerals, these are what are called the terminal symbols of the grammar, because these are symbols that will form part of the strings that we are eventually trying to generate. Okay, so the ultimate constituents of the phrases we generate will be symbols from this alphabet. But we've also got some other symbols here that are playing a more auxiliary role. So these symbols x, var, and num, which can also feature in these rules. So here we've got a terminal star, but we've got non-terminals x and exp. So these symbols are called non-terminals because they don't actually appear in the expressions that you want to end up with, but rather they play a sort of structural role in naming and identifying various kinds of relevant subphrases of expressions. So we've got a bunch of symbols we declare to be called terminals, a bunch of other symbols we declare to be called non-terminals, and then we pick out one of these non-terminals and call it the start symbol. So here let's declare that X for expression is the start symbol, and that means the phrases we're interested in are basically going to be expressions. So let's see how from this bunch of rules we can actually generate some strings, and we generate them by means of trees. So here I've got the same rules, just for convenience, a slightly smaller font. Okay, and let's see how we can grow some trees for these rules. So we start here with just the start symbol of our grammar, which is an expression. Okay, so start with just this by itself. And then what you do is you look at this and you say, well, what do we want this expression to consist of? So we can look at our rules for expressions, and we've got 5 possibilities, and we pick one possibility. So here we're picking this rule. We're saying, well, an expression can consist of 3 units, an expression, a star, and an expression. So let's start building a tree with these 3 as the descendants of this expression. So we're saying we've got an expression unit here which consists of 3 units, a star symbol by itself, another expression, and another expression. So now we've got this star. This is a terminal symbol of the language, so we can't do anything further to expand this. But now we can look at either of these 2 exp symbols, and we can choose a rule to expand those. So let's look at this one, and let's say we will expand this one using the rule that an expression can take the form of a numeral. So we can draw another bit of tree with numeral as the sole descendant of this expression thing here. And now we can look in turn at this num thing. We notice that we've also got rules for expanding a num, and we can expand a num to any digit from 0 to 9. So let's expand it to 5, and then because 5 is a terminal symbol, we stop. This is why terminals are called terminals, you see, because as you make your way down any branch path in this tree, when you reach a terminal, then you're at a leaf of the tree, so you don't go any further down. On the other hand, we've got another expression here, so let's say we pick this rule here, that an expression can expand to open bracket, expression, close bracket. So you just, at each stage, while you've got some non-terminal left as a leaf in a tree, you choose some rule that can be applied to it. So here we're expanding expression to a variable, and here we're expanding variable to one of its possibilities, x. So you grow a tree until you can't grow anymore, because all you've got terminals at all the leaves, okay? And then you just read round the fringes of the tree, the leaves of the tree, so you've got 5 times open brackets x plus 3 close brackets. Okay, so that's a string like that. Okay, so we say that's the string produced or generated by this syntax tree. Okay, and then we say any string that you can generate in this way, any string for which you can grow some syntax tree that gives you that string, is a string in the language. So here I've just kind of chosen at will which rules I'm going to apply when. I'll just say, oh, I feel like having a plus expression now, I feel like having a times one, and so on. So obviously by making different choices, you could generate many, many more strings. We can in fact, this grammar will let us generate infinitely many strings. And then we just say that the language generated by the grammar is by definition the set of all possible strings of terminals that we can derive from the start symbol by such a syntax tree. Okay? So we start with the start symbol, which is a non-terminal. We keep expanding nodes, expanding non-terminal nodes while we can. So you'll notice that all these rules, that on the left-hand side they have a non-terminal symbol, whereas on the right-hand side they might have a mix of terminals and non-terminals. So the non-terminals are what on the tree, which are the sort of internal nodes of this tree, and these are ones that are still waiting to be expanded, they're asking to be expanded. And then when you finish so that what you've got around the fringes of the tree is nothing but terminals, then you declare that to be a string of language. And you can see intuitively that the tree gives you the structure of the string, so it somehow tells you that in this string, 5 times brackets x plus 3. But the substring from the substring x plus 3, for example, which is the stuff below this node here, that's a sort of structurally significant subphrase of the overall phrase, in a way that times open brackets x isn't, right? Okay, that's not a sensible sub expression to consider. So we would say that x plus 3 there is a constituent of this expression because it gets its own node in the tree, whereas star open brackets x isn't a constituent, it's just a random bit of garbage. Okay? So I've said that any string for which you can get from by means of a syntax tree is in the language. Of course, it might be the case that some strings can be generated in more than one way by a tree. So here's a string 1 plus 2 plus 3. And if you look at it, we can apply the rules in different orders. So we've got an expression can be an expression plus an expression. So this expression on the left could be the 1 plus 2 bit, and the one on the right could be the 3 bit. Or we could have it grouped the other way, 1 plus 2 plus 3. Okay. Now, of course, if it was 1 plus 2 times 3, then there'll be an actual difference in value between what you would get from these two expressions. One of them would give you, so this one will give you 9, and that one will give you 7, I think. In this case, they both give you 6, but nevertheless, that's only because of, by virtue of some sort of accident, well, not accidental, but some fact about plus that's not none of our business at this stage as language designers. So if we're processing the language, we care about whether a string gets understood as this one or as that one. So that's called structural ambiguity. We'll be saying a lot more about that. What I want to say on this side is we don't mind for the point of view of defining a language, we don't mind whether a string can be defined by one syntax tree or by two or by lots more. If there's any syntax tree at all that defines the language, then it's in the language. Otherwise, it's out. Okay? Another clicker question, getting your fill today. So we've seen that there are two syntax trees for 1 plus 2 plus 3. So have a think about how many syntax trees of this kind there might be for 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4. Okay? You might want to scribble them out. In an effort to make it less confusing, I don't think any of you would vote that there was only one syntax tree or that there were none. So I've not included one as an option. So I've said press 2 if you think there are 2, 3 if you think there are 3, similarly for 4 and 5. But if you think there are more than 5, press 1. So I hope that that's less confusing than anything else. So expression 1 plus 2 plus... Shall I write... Okay. I'll write this up there for you, just in case you have difficulty remembering. And that's sort of to remind you what syntax trees look like. Okay. So.
Are you ready to have a go at this?
How many syntax trees are there? Oh, right, you want to see the question. Okay. Oh, I can't do that while the clickers are going on. Oh, yeah, yes, I can. Yeah, okay. Oh, yeah, you want to see the options. Yeah, okay. Okay, that's pretty good. Okay, so I think there are five, so quite a lot of you got five. Some of you thought there were more. Does anyone really think there are more than
five? Just in case.
I'll draw the ones I think there are, and if anyone thinks there's another one, you can tell me. So just schematically, okay, so there's, you can have 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4, yeah, or you can have 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4, yeah, or you can have 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4, or you can have 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 with some plus signs in it, and you have 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4, right. So they're all different, I think. Can confirm that from a distance. Does anyone have another one? Right, good. Okay. So the answer's five. But it looks like you all sort of thought there were quite a lot. So that's the time available. Probably pretty good. Okay. Okay. So now where are we? Ooh, I've got way. Okay, right. So that's syntax trees, and syntax trees are the basic sort of structural form for expressions that we're interested in. But if you want an alternative and perhaps slightly more machine-oriented way of thinking about generating strings, instead of thinking in terms of syntax trees, you can perhaps sort of less picturesquely, somehow more concretely, think about generating strings by means of derivations involving strings of stuff here. And this is strings of stuff where we've got mixed terminals and non-terminals. So the idea is I sort of start from our start symbol expression and I expand it in stages so as to arrive at the string we're interested in. And the rule is at each stage we pick just one non-terminal that's somewhere in the expression we've got and expand it using some choice of rules. So expand this one using the rule that says it can go to exp times exp times exp. And now we pick this exp here and we choose to expand this one using num. Okay. And now I pick this one here and I choose to expand that using this other one, the bracketing possibility. And now I choose to expand this inner exp here to this. And now I say, well, let's go back to this one and expand the num to 5. So I'm sort of randomly picking some non-terminal that's currently left in the string and choosing some rule to apply to it until I get to this. So you can think of this as sort of instructions for building a tree in some order. This says, okay. Okay, so you can think of reading this as saying, well, expand this to x times x. Right, and now expand the exp on the left to num. And now expand the exp on the right to this, and so on. So, yeah. At each stage we choose one non-terminal that's in the expression we've got and expand it using a suitable rule. And when there are only terminals left, we stop. Now, it's pretty clear that you could build the same syntax tree with lots of different derivations, because the derivations basically tell you the order of growing your node. So you were decided to grow from this node and then this one. But we could have done those two steps the other way around. So you see, even in the case where there's no ambiguity. Even in the case where there's only actually one syntax tree, there might be lots of different orders of growing it. Okay, so 1 plus 2, for example, there's only one syntax tree for that, but you could grow it in this way. And here I've done what's called a leftmost derivation, because the protocol here is that at each stage I've picked the leftmost non-terminal in the string to expand. So here we've got exp is being expanded to num, this num is being expanded to 1, and now the leftmost non-terminal is this one, so we expand that. So we kind of work our way through the string from left to right, and we see sort of terminals growing from the left and some non-terminals piling up at the right. Whereas here I've done the opposite. I've started at the rightmost one each time and expanded it. So you can see that the terminals are growing from the right. Obviously doesn't matter. So most of the time we don't care about this very fine-grained business of being able to have multiple derivations for the same syntax tree. Most of the time it's the syntax tree we actually want to focus on. So we do care if there are different syntax trees, but we don't care if there are different derivations for the syntax tree. Okay, it's only different syntax trees that create a serious issue. But we will need to say a bit about these particular derivations, and especially the leftmost and rightmost ones. They will play some kind of role later on when we talk about parsing algorithms. Okay, it's 5 o'clock, but I'll just see. I'll just show you. Okay, I'll just finish by showing you this. So this language, A to the N, B to the N, we've been talking about all the time. Okay, you can generate it by a context-free grammar with just two rules. So a string S can be either the empty string, or it can be some other string S with an A and a B stuck on the front and stuck on the ends. Okay, so think about what trees for this might look like. We can grow ourselves some nice Christmas trees like that. Okay. And well-matched sequences of brackets, you can do that too. But I'll say more about that next time. Okay, so have a good weekend. Thank you.